Today, the personal scandals that threaten to drown out Boris Johnson's conservative conference message. And as the US tries to deepen ties with Saudi Arabia, a friend of Jamal Khashoggi says don't let his death be for nothing.
I've been tasked, one way or the other, to get Brexit done.
Boris Johnson wants to talk about getting Brexit done. That message is plastered all over this week's Tory conference. And he wants the public to hear his new spending promises on schools, hospitals and buses.
That's what we're doing, simple things like buses.
Right, we've got the point about buses.
And no, you haven't.
But his message keeps being fractured by two separate scandals.
Have you got a woman problem? I've always been a big champion of women.
What would you word would you use to characterise your relationship with Jennifer Arcuri?
Look, I've said a great deal about that.
You are saying that when a distinguished journalist said that you grabbed her thigh, what are you telling us about those allegations?
I don't minimise the importance of such allegation.
When he stands up to address the party faithful today, he won't talk about his relationship with technology business owner Jennifer Arcuri when he was London mayor. And he probably won't mention groping allegations by journalist Charlotte Edwards. But the questions over his character that they have raised will continue to loom over the finale of the Conservative Party conference in Manchester. From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, the allegations that Boris Johnson cannot shake. Matt Weaver, Guardian reporter. Our story begins in London in 2012, the year that Boris Johnson won re-election as London mayor. Lots seems to be going wrong for him now, but there was once a time when he seemed to have the Midas touch.
Well, it seems odd now that back in 2012, he had a real broad appeal.
What this part of London has is what I can only call the vibe. All the things that you associate with Shoreditch and this part of the city. And
he was on the telly a lot. He was kind of like a personality that happened to be a Tory politician.
It was 213 years ago that a group of thrilling, thrusting young British scientists and technicians created the Royal Institution that drove the Industrial Revolution and made this city the heart of the greatest industrial and commercial empire the world has ever seen. And it is in that tradition that we are today announcing this fantastic vision for a Silicon roundabout hub.
London was quite a buzzy place. There was Tech City centred around Silicon Roundabout at Old Street. Lots of attention and money had come from government into this burgeoning industry, and he wanted to be seen to be at the heart of that.
Entrepreneurs can meet and ideas can cross-pollinate, and where apprentices can be trained.
And in London at the same time is a woman called Jennifer Arcuri. Who is she?
So Jennifer Arcuri is a Californian student. She comes to London to study for an MBA at the Holt International Business School. Before coming to London, she was a model and a bit part actor. She was in 2011, a Bollywood film called Naughty at 40.
He's naughty at 40, he's sexy, he's a hottie.
Bollywood?
Yep. And she also played a Mae West character in a TV series that sort of spoofed early black and white films. She joined Johnson's re-election campaign in 2012. And there's pictures of her with Boris Johnson campaigning on top of a double-decker bus. And there's another one of her holding a Better Off with Boris placard. So at about this time in 2012, she also launches a firm called InnoTech, which is a kind of an events company for bringing people together in the burgeoning London tech scene.
The reason there's this massive focus on the relationship between Johnson and Arcuri is because it's now embroiled in allegations about conflicts of interest around speaking events, grants, sponsorship, trade missions. Can we go through them one by one, starting at the same time that you've been telling me about, back in 2012, in April? It appears then that their link was beyond her volunteering in his campaign.
Yeah, curiously, for a high-profile mayor in 2012, Boris Johnson appears at the launch event of Innotech and speaks very warmly about both the firm and Jennifer Arcuri. At one point, he says, "Vive Innotech and forward with all your deliberations," and then turns to Jennifer Arcuri and says, "Will that do, Jennifer? Can I go now?" And Innotech then used a clip of him saying that on a lot of its promotional videos since.
"Viva Innotech, folks. Have a and forward with all your deliberations. Will that do, Jennifer? Can I go now? Thank you very much."
His comments really point to the fact that they clearly knew each other pretty well. In the end, he spoke four times at her events, and another one he said in a Google Hangout, "I always love to hang out at Innotech.
Come to London, build your businesses here. The Mayor of London supports you. Everyone at Innotech supports you. Thank you so much."
"Thank you very much, Jennifer.
Thank you for coming and hanging out with us."
"My pleasure."
"You like hanging out with us, right?"
I do. I'm always happy to hang out at Innotech.
And she certainly made Johnson feel very welcome at these events. At one of them, she had a cake made in the shape of City Hall with three icing figurines of Boris Johnson. And there's one picture of her pushing one of these figurines in her mouth.
Was it a big cake?
Yeah, it was really elaborate. It had a sort of icing image of City Hall, Canary Wharf thing, one of Boris on a bicycle, one of Johnson sort of speaking at an Innotech event, and another of him on a sort of grand screen.
Whoever made that cake should go on Bake Off. Sounds amazing.
And she used to, at the time, she also boasted to friends that she listed Johnson on her phone as Alex the Great, using his real name.
Alex de Pfeffel.
Indeed.
Okay, so very clearly, as early as 2012, Boris Johnson knows Jennifer Arcuri. They clearly have a professional relationship. She supported him politically. He's really supported her startup, Innotech, and has continued to do that. And I guess that brings us to what has been the biggest focus of the story so far. The second question here, around sponsorship for her company. What was given to her in 2013?
So at this time, the mayor's promotional agency, London & Partners, gave Arcuri's company initially £10,000 worth of sponsorship, and it later gave another £1,500 of sponsorship to an event. Now, we don't know how much Johnson was involved in these decisions, but this was an agency that was his responsibility, and under the list of the declarations of interest that he declared as mayor that are still available online, there's no mention of Arcuri or her companies.
It's understandable that there's controversy over this £10,000 sponsorship from a group that's literally described as the Mayor of London's promotional agency. Now, it's clear they had a professional relationship, but there have been reports that he visited her Shoreditch flat at the time. What are they based on?
The landlord of the flat has confirmed that, as do friends of Arcuri's at the time. We don't know quite how many times he visited, but it's said that he was having technology lessons in the flat.
Okay, so questions being asked about that money. Not clear whether he's had any personal role in that, but the next part of the story does seem to get closer to Johnson himself, around a series of trade missions. Can you explain what happened?
So she applied for places on trade missions that were being run jointly by London & Partners, this promotional agency, and the mayor's office. There were trips to New York, Tel Aviv and Singapore. And she was initially denied access to these trips because she didn't fit the criteria. But after intervention, crucially, from the mayor's office, she was granted a place on these trips.
What does intervention by the mayor's office mean?
There's an email trail that shows that she was initially turned down, after she appealed, as it were, Johnson's office had a word with London and Partners and she was allowed on. So that meant she got to go to New York, Tel Aviv, Singapore with Johnson and the rest of the team.
How valuable would that be to a company like hers?
Well, again, it's a big thing for her. She can then hobnob not just in London, but internationally. It would have given her huge kudos in that world.
Overall, the money you've told me about so far isn't close to the total that was suggested initially in the Sunday Times of £126,000 worth of public money to Arcuri. That's because two of the grants were from bodies not directly linked to Johnson. Can you tell me about them?
Yep, she won a highly sought-after entrepreneur visa under the government's Sirius programme. That's a programme that's run by the Department of Trade. And she also got a £15,000 grant for some of her events under that programme. And then, in the meantime, she sets up an organisation called Hacker House, which was designed for kind of ethical hackers. And earlier this year, rolling forward to 2019, she was awarded a £100,000 grant by the Department of Digital Culture, Media and Sport for a scheme aimed at fostering digital skills in the UK. And this has raised questions because although it was designed to foster talent in this country, the company's ties to the UK are fairly tenuous. She moved back to the States in 2018. The company is registered as an address in the UK. It was registered in Company's House at an address in Cheshire, which was then changed last week to an address in Fleet Street. We went down there last week and the receptionist there freely admitted that this was a virtual office and there was they weren't actually based there.
So how did you go about finding out where they're based?
Well, the government was asked about how this grant was awarded in the Commons last week.
Leila Moran!
The department appears to have given Hacker House a £100,000 grant in January 2019 as part of the Cyber Skills Immediate Impact Fund, a grant that was open to initiatives based in and that operate from Britain, and that furthermore, these grants should not exceed 50% of the company's revenue. We now know that Hacker House is not based in the UK. Mr. Speaker, where is the due diligence?
The officials have done the usual due diligence.
And the digital minister, Matt Warman, insisted that all the due diligence was done. He pointed out that the company was registered at Company's House, and he said it even had a British phone number.
As far as Company's House is concerned, it is a company with a British phone number. We will review that, but we have no reason to think we have...
One of the things we did was instantly ring the British phone number.
Thank you for calling Hacker House. Please note this call may be monitored or recorded for quality
and
assurance.
Got through to a very
right
American-sounding answer machine.
American people live in the UK.
They do. Okay. After the recording, it then went through to a receptionist.
Hacker House, how can I help?
Oh, hi.
When I asked her where she was, she was a bit coy about it.
This is the reception.
Where are you based?
Well, I don't have a specific location information to provide.
Where are you speaking from?
I'm in an off-site location. I'm sorry, I can't really release information of where I'm at.
Which state are you in?
How can I help you, sir?
Which state are you in?
I'm in a different state. How can I help you?
I just want to know where you are.
All she would say was that she was in the United States.
Yeah,
she wouldn't even tell me what state
location,
she was in.
I'm not allowed to release that type
so
of information.
So I kind of asked her what time it was.
And what time is it there?
And she said...
It's in the morning. It's a.m.
Okay. You can't even tell me what zone you're in?
What time was it here?
It was the afternoon. It was just after Warman had given this statement that due diligence had been done. It suggests that there are some question marks over how much due diligence had gone into the awarding of this grant. When all you had to do was ring up the company and find out that they weren't even based in the UK for a grant that was supposed to foster digital skills in this country.
Right, so answers being demanded about that money from the DCMS, which, to be fair, is from before the time that Johnson became Prime Minister and from a department he did not run. But our colleague Simon Murphy has an interesting exclusive on the other one, the Sirius programme from the Department for International Trade, that suggests the woman who ran the scheme had previously worked in that same Mayor of London's promotional agency when Johnson was at City Hall. So another link. And lots of this is now having an impact. There are four investigations into the Prime Minister's conduct at the time. What are they?
So the Department for Digital Culture, Media and Sport have halted the £100,000 grant to Hacker House. And they're looking into how it was awarded. So £53,000 that hasn't yet been paid has been put on hold. Johnson's successor, Sadiq Khan, has launched a City Hall inquiry into what processes were followed during the time that Arcuri's companies were given money. The London Assembly's Oversight Committee has given Johnson 14 days to explain how grants and privileged access were awarded to Arcuri. And then late on Friday, Johnson was formally referred to a police watchdog into whether he committed a criminal offence of misconduct in public office.
Through all of this, I presume you've gone to both her and to him. How has she responded?
Well, Simon Murphy, my colleague, was messaging her all last week, trying to get a response from her. We put all of these allegations to her. She didn't say anything for several days. And then finally, last Friday, she broke her silence and said that what we were publishing was fake news. When we asked her what wasn't true about the reporting, she refused to answer that.
And has he responded?
Yeah, well, so whenever Boris Johnson has been challenged about his personal life, he said this is sort of out of bounds. But in this one, it's much more difficult for him to do that because public money involved.
Another issue I must ask you about is Jennifer Arcuri. I'm not going to be...
On the Andrew Marr programme on BBC at the weekend, he said that all of these grants had been made with full propriety.
Everything was done with full propriety.
So you did declare the interest, and you'll be able to say that when you're called
to
various hearings.
No, I said
hearings.
That everything was done in accordance
I
with
ask
full
you a very specific question.
Well,
you have to declare interest. Did you declare
there was
it?
No, there was no interest to declare.
Well, she was a friend of yours. She got public money.
No,
she got
let's
access.
Be absolutely clear. I'm very
he also was asked whether he declared an interest, and he said there was no need to declare an interest.
What does he mean by that? Because presumably, if you have a relationship of any type with someone and they're going to be awarded money from an organisation that you're responsible for, then you would need to declare an interest.
Well, this is the question that these four inquiries will hopefully get to the bottom of.
There's been this kind of running insinuation in a lot of the stories that their personal relationship went quite far without anyone saying that explicitly. And then on the weekend, the Sunday Times reported that there was a suggestion of a sexual affair. What evidence is there for that?
We don't know the exact nature of the relationship. The Sunday Times says that Arcuri confided in four friends that she and Johnson were having an affair. Two of these friends have emerged in notes from a New York Times reporter who was given a tip-off that they were having an affair in 2013.
Were you having an affair with Jennifer Arcuri?
I've said what I've had to say about that matter, and I think perhaps the most important point is that I'm very, very proud of everything we did in London.
So you're not denying that you were having an affair with her?
If they were having an affair, how would that change any potential investigation?
If they were, Johnson's insistence that there was no interest to declare will surely come back to haunt him.
And this isn't the only scandal hanging over the Prime Minister this week. Columnist Charlotte Edwards wrote this weekend in the Sunday Times about an incident that happened in the Spectator offices where he was editor. Tell us about her claim.
Well, she claimed that she went to a dinner in 1999, and during the dinner, he grabbed her thigh. And when she told this to a friend who was sitting on the other side from Boris Johnson, the friend said that he'd done exactly the same thing to her. So Edwards is describing him as a double thigh squeezer.
And to just give a bit more detail into what she said, here are her words from the column. More wine is poured, more wine is drunk. Under the table, I feel Johnson's hand on my thigh. He gives it a squeeze. His hand is high up my leg and he has enough inner flesh between his fingers to make me sit suddenly upright. That is as much of an allegation as what forced Michael Fallon out of government when he was Defence Secretary. How has Boris Johnson responded to that?
Well, number 10 is saying that the allegation is untrue. Charlotte Edwards is saying that her memory, therefore, must be better than his.
And there is a lot of pressure on him because her allegations are being put time and again to cabinet ministers. How are they responding to it?
Well, Matt Hancock described Charlotte Edwards as a trustworthy journalist, and he's a cabinet colleague of Boris Johnson's. And that tweet was retweeted by Amber Rudd, who resigned last month, and she said, "I agree with Matt."
All of this comes in the middle of the Conservatives' annual conference. Boris Johnson is going to stand up to talk later today, and it's very clear from what we're hearing up there that what he wants the media to focus on is how he's going to get Brexit done and how the Tories are going to make big spending promises to try to ease off on austerity. But these allegations about his past conduct are not going to go away, are they?
No, there are four investigations sort of squirreling away and any number of journalists doing the same thing. More and more things keep coming out about this.
Matt, thank you very much.
Thanks.
That was Matt Weaver. You can read his reporting and that of Simon Murphy, who has that exclusive line on the Jennifer R. Curie link at theguardian.com. We'll be bringing you analysis of Johnson's conference speech tomorrow. Coming up, what Jamal Khashoggi's death should still mean for Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman.
The way things are isn't the way they have to be.
But knowing what to challenge and how to change it isn't always clear.
That's why independent journalism has never mattered more.
When we are free to follow any lead
and question any authority,
we can confront the status quo,
uncover vital alternatives,
and bring clarity to the world's most complex issues.
We can help our readers understand the world.
So together we can fight for a better one.
Hope is power.
And with your support,
you'll always find it
at The Guardian.
Now, it's been a year since the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi by the Saudi Arabian regime after he was critical of its behaviour. US President Donald Trump initially sought to exonerate Mohammed bin Salman and has not since pushed for the Crown Prince to resign. And he remains in place despite wider international condemnation. Now Wada Kamfar urges the world not to let his friend Jamal to have died in vain.
Did you order the murder of Jamal Khashoggi?
Absolutely not. This was a heinous crime. But I take full responsibility as a leader in Saudi Arabia, especially since it was committed by individuals working for the Saudi government.
Now, for us, it's very clear. Most of the details of his murder is known to everyone at this stage. However, the killers, the murderers themselves, have not received the just punishment that they deserve. Although the Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Salman, he in a way acknowledged the fact that it has happened under his watch, but he never told us what he did. Nothing could have happened of this scale without his order instruction. The whole state was used. Aeroplanes belonged to the Crown Prince's office, and most of the guys who committed this crime were actually associates of his staff and associates of his entourage. So it's impossible to say that this has happened just by people who have decided this without his knowledge. Unfortunately, Trump administration and the international powers that were trying to get close to Mohammed bin Salman has failed us in pursuing the truth about Jamal and in punishing those who have killed him and in standing with democracy in the Arab world.
Saudi Arabia, if we broke with them, I think your oil prices would go through the roof. I've kept them down. They've helped me keep them down. It's a very simple equation for me. I'm about make America great again, and I'm about America first.
Oil is more important than dignity. And for the West in particular, the relationship with our corrupt regimes is much more important than their relationship with the people of this region. As a friend, I miss him very much. As a friend, I think I have learned a lot from him. The cause that Jamal carried with him is still continuing. People are now more aware. They have the courage. I love these people of the Arab world. In the streets of Cairo, in the streets of Tunisia, everywhere, they are not going to be succumbing to dictatorship and tyranny. Even events in Saudi Arabia, as we see it today, Mohammed bin Salman is paying very heavy price for Jamal Khashoggi murder and for all his crimes and mistakes in Yemen and everywhere else. So I would say 1 year after Jamal murder, I am happy that the cause of democracy and freedom in the Arab world is progressing and progressing steadily and increasing in the right direction.
That was Wada Kamfar. Do read his column on the website. Thanks as ever for all the lovely reviews and messages. I'm hoping that Pandora Bee and Summer Pineapple will soon forgive us for taking a break in August. Go on. That's it for today. My thanks to Matt Weaver and Wadar Kamfar. Today's episode was produced by Josh Kelly, Elizabeth Cassin, and Gary Marshall. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll be back tomorrow.